When the music fades, all is stripped away, and I simply come, longing just to bring something that's of worth, that will bless your heart.
Hi, this is Chaplains Timothy Burdick
and Stephanie Burdick,
and we'd like to welcome you to the Visions of Love podcast, reaching out to the spiritually and physically blind throughout the world.
Hello, folks. Welcome to our latest episode of the Visions of Love podcast. Today, we're going to feature part two of our interview with Chaplain David Yanez, Chaplain Timothy's former supervisor at Banner Baywood Hospital here in Mesa, Arizona. And he has some more stories for you about the sometimes rewarding and sometimes heartbreaking job of being a hospital chaplain. We hope that you will enjoy this episode and be inspired by David's stories. Thank you.
When it's all about you, it's all about you, Jesus.
Thank you.
To contact us, all you need to do is go to mynvm.com.
NVM is an acronym for New Vision Ministries.
If you want to contact us, there's a contact form on the website. Or if you don't know Christ or need prayer, please call 507-369-6861. Thank you.
And now for part two of our interview with David Yanez.
I was just going to ask you what you would say were the most challenging, some of the most challenging experiences you had in the hospital.
I would have to say by far and away the most challenging times were during the end-of-life situations, whether it was in the emergency room or in the ICUs. Sometimes other places, but most of the time would be in the emergency department or in the ICUs. Yeah, I remember many, many different scenarios, but I guess the one that comes to mind mostly is when the family is not on the same page in regards to their loved one or the patient. Some of the family members want to do everything possible to try to save, which sounds very reasonable, to try to save their loved one. But I remember one particular one, family that had already designated, the patient had already designated a representative from the family, a family member who had the advance directives in his hand and knew exactly, as the representative of this patient, he was going to try to fulfill to the best of his ability the wishes of their loved one. And I remember they were going back and forth, and I'll just say our loved one, the majority of the family would say, would not want to be disconnected from life support. The actual representative, you know, of the patient, who is a family member also, said no. He told me, and it's in black and white here, that he would not want to be connected to a machine for an unreasonable amount of time. And at this point, it had already been several days, actually over a week, where they were still trying to keep him alive, keep the patient alive. Anyway, it finally came down to the point where I kind of had to negotiate and arbitrate and kind of bring some peace to the whole thing and say, and just ask the family, what do you believe your, say, brother in this case, really wanted? Would he have wanted to be on this life support or not? We've already been here over a week. I would have them respond, and some of them said, yeah, I don't think that he would have wanted to stay on for this amount of time. And so I was slowly able to kind of bring them around to the place where they were on the same page, and they finally allowed the patient to pass in peace, as his wishes were anyway. It's an honor. It's always a privilege to be involved in a situation like that, because even though it's an end-of-life situation where, you know, death is going to occur, it was always a blessing to be able to help the family get on the same page and bring honor to God, even through a death. Because especially through a death, many times I would lead the gospel with them and I would share prayers throughout that time where they also would have an opportunity to accept Christ.
I was surprised. I thought you'd say the most challenging situation you had was when you were my supervisor.
Oh, I'll take all that back. That's true. Yeah. I would go home with a big headache after. No.
I made it pretty challenging for you sometimes. I was wondering, how would you compare and contrast the military chaplaincy and the hospital chaplaincy? Is there any way that you can do that?
And within the military, because you have a uniform and you have rank, I do have the ability to flow a little bit easier from one platoon or one squadron one area of the base to another, even more so than within a hospital setting. A hospital setting, as a chaplain, normally I have access to most any area of the hospital except for the surgical areas. And even there, I've been there when there's end of life and they were not able to transfer the patient outside the surgical area. And so, yes, I was able to even get into that area. But they're very similar as far as that goes. I think, I do have to say that I believe that the military has a little bit more credibility and respect for their chaplains than the hospital chaplains, sadly to say. It's more of a team effort within the military, not so much always with the hospital, because some hospitals come in with a viewpoint that or perspective, thinking that the chaplain is not a part of the team, because we're not medical, we're not doctors, we're not nurses, but we still are clinical, we still work with all of those above people, doctors, nurses, therapists, whomever it may be. But there are some people, again, within the administration, depending who the administration is, that are more accepting of a hospital chaplain, and some that are not. But within the military, they're almost always accepted. I would have to say, I have to say, it's 100%. The military chaplain is basically always accepted in any kind of situation, as long as the troops or the airmen are asking for the presence of a chaplain. A chaplain can be there. So it's I've got the privilege of being with four-star generals, able to go into high security risk areas on various bases. It's different in that area, in that sense. But basically, I think we have a greater respect within the military than most hospital chaplains perhaps would have.
Would you say that it's similar when people are facing death in both as far as their openness to Christ?
Not always. Within the hospital setting, I think it's that. I think the hospital setting lends itself a little bit more to those people who are at end of life or had some traumatic incident happen, an accident. And so, yes, they're much more open to hearing the word of the Lord being prayed for and even having the opportunity to ask them to open their hearts to the Lord as Lord and Savior. The military, it could be a little harder, because there's not, on a day-to-day basis anyway, when I was active duty, there's not a lot of traumatic things that's happened, unless I go to the hospital, because they have their own base hospitals, many of them. But within the military, there was a lot of PTSD, a lot of post-traumatic stress. And when there was a lot of post-traumatic stress, psychologically, emotionally, and spiritually, I had a lot of opportunity to speak with many of the troops. And I see that much, much more even with going through this pandemic that we went through this and we're going through this year. I felt a lot more within the military, and I had a lot more opportunity to just kind of be there as a presence of, of hope and direction within the military. It's very similar. I can't say, one is better than the other. It's just a different set of circumstances. Mm-hmm. And again, you'd have to be called to working, say, in a hospital setting and seeing a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, grief, and death. Well, on the military side, not as much pain and suffering physically, but pain and suffering, I would say, emotionally.
Well, what I think of when you said emotionally, that's kind of interesting, because I was going to ask you if you could speak to the issue of loneliness in both places and how that fits in.
Yes, it's a good question. I think the first and foremost, my experience with very young recruits into the military, and in my case, it was the Air Force, these young men and women that had just turned maybe even 18 or 19, they were folks that had never left their hometown, never been outside of their hometowns, much less their state. Many times they try to locate first-timers in their home state, but many times it doesn't work like that, so they have to move to another state. but the loneliness, I think, that happens for many of these younger troops within the military can be devastating, to the point where many of them don't know who to reach out to for help and what to do, and so they end up getting in trouble. You know, they go to the bars and they go to places, undesirable places downtown. Mm-hmm. And one thing I did find out right at the beginning is that a military person is never alone without another, how would I say, without the military knowing their whereabouts. And by that I mean, if someone is going to frequent the bars, the casinos, or wherever it is that they are, there's always an undercover military person there also.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so it's not a, you know, you would say, well, you know, don't they have freedom to, you know, do what they want to do? Well, up to a point. they can't bring down the good name of the government, especially the military, and that branch of the military, in this case, the Air Force. So there's always kind of an undercover person nearby. If they get into too much trouble within that setting, they will extricate them. They will get them out of there and take them back to the, you know, take them back to the base. And if and if they have a hangover or whatever it is, it's, you know, they'll either put them in, you know, they'll put them in jail, or they'll they could even take them to the hospital if they get hurt. But so they really are taking care of their own to a large extent. The loneliness that I've seen with many, mostly men, young men, and some women, is really, really, it's apparent. You can see it. There are some that have had a little bit of religious direction in their life, and so many of them do come to the chapels. They come to the chaplains for help, and for that, I can really thank God, because when they do come to the chapel, you know, they will experience, I hope, acceptance, for the most part, hope, and redirection in their life.
How would you contrast that with loneliness in the hospital?
The loneliness in the hospital is, I think, mostly in the setting, the most recent setting that I had, and also, Timothy, I think you would agree, we have a lot of senior citizens at the particular hospital that I was at Banner Baywood, but these people were very, very lonely. They had already maybe lost their loved one, their spouse, and then so sick, you know, they were so ill that, you know, they couldn't really function very well on their own. And so their family members would kind of, you know, they'd end up putting them into a, you know, rest home, into a residential facility, group homes, whatever it may be. And that compounded the loneliness even. And the sad part, because I also did a hospice ministry for a couple of years before I became a hospital chaplain, the loneliness was so strong because many of these same family members would not visit their loved one in the facility wherever they were.
Wow.
And so it became disheartening, and they lost hope. Many of them lose hope before they lose their lives. They lose hope of meaning, of purpose, and their own families basically rejecting them right at the end of life. And that was probably the saddest part for me as a hospice chaplain, or, you know, healthcare chaplain, but the hospice is, right now I have two students who are working in a hospice setting, and they share some similar things. It's very, very difficult because the family members, not all of them, I'm not saying all of them, but many of them feel that they no longer, because they're no longer recognized by their loved ones, they no longer need to go and visit their loved ones. Yeah, I guess, make a long story short, basically, much of the loneliness, rather, that happens in a healthcare or hospital setting is because many times the family members have already rejected them, or they don't put a whole lot of time and effort in supporting their loved one.
Wow, that's a shame. Well, I'm going to wind this up, but the last question I wanted to ask you, do you think that one of the reasons maybe for that rejection, I'm sure there are a lot of reasons, but possibly one reason is because they're in a state of denial. They just don't want to face it.
You're talking about the family member?
Yes, yes, I'm sorry.
Yes, yes, I think you're right, yeah. Many of them are in denial. I think it's pretty safe to say. As long as they are in denial, they really won't progress and accept the impending death of their loved one. And by the way, it's up to the chaplain. It's one of the jobs of the chaplain, rather, is to make that a reality. Maybe that's the wrong word. To talk to the family members and let them know that, yes, I mean, you know, the medical profession can only do so much. Obviously, they're not God. They may have to let go of their loved one. I had the opportunity actually yesterday, which was very unusual because I'm no longer working in a hospital setting, but I was able to go visit a hospice patient yesterday at a home, and the family members were there. They were very supportive. This was a Hispanic family, by the way. They were in the home. They were very, very sad. You know, they really couldn't talk very much. They were just, you know, didn't know what to say. And that's what happens sometimes. Many of the people have no words, and they're kind of like numb with everything that has been going on with their loved one, and they don't know, you know, how to address the issues of, like you say, loneliness or rejection, and sometimes they ask, you know, where is God in all of this? Well, it's not easy to help them in every area, but I try, and we try as chaplains to help them emotionally and spiritually. And yesterday was, I think, an example, at least in part, where I was able to not just share the word through scripture, but also talk to them about the upcoming or impending death of their loved one. And acceptance, as you say, is very difficult, but they knew that it was going to happen sooner or later.
Well, I lied. I have one more question.
Oh, man, I can't believe it.
I wanted to ask you, have you ever seen people who are believers use their faith as a denial?
Well, yes. One came right to my mind immediately. There was a young fellow, I don't think he was maybe 20 years old, who had been diagnosed basically with brain death, and his brain no longer was really functioning at that time, but he had already stayed in the hospital 2 weeks. He was there a whole 2 weeks. It was a very strong Christian family who had come to the place where they were blaming the hospital for not being able to keep their son alive.
Uh-huh.
They felt that their rationale was because the son's, he was on life support, and so when anybody is on life support, their skin is still pliable, it's warm to the touch, there's still
yes,
a pulse, but in this case there was no brain activity.
Wow.
But they were still in denial, and they said, no, God still has the last word, and I do believe that. In this particular case, God did not come through at that point and offer a miracle where the young man would revive and his brain would, you know, become alive again. They even blamed me for siding on the side of the hospital and saying, well, I no longer had faith, the faith that was necessary for a miracle to happen. And so this particular family was holding out for a miracle of new life for their son, which, you know, I could understand if I was in their shoes, but they would not accept that he was already gone. They kept him alive because they wanted more family members to come to the room and to be able to be together.
Wow.
There were Spanish speakers, so I was also involved in this one because of the language, but they called the radio and TV folks to, you know, come and expose the hospital as an inept hospital, or a hospital that is not able to help in these times. But anyway, I think it all turned around, thank God, only because I know God's spirit is powerful. The young man finally passed away on his own. But this is really hard for me, looking at,
yes,
at a Christian, very strong Christian family, not accepting and being in total denial, not accepting that the, you know, their son would eventually die.
Yes. Well, I wanted to say thank you, David. We really appreciate you coming on, and thank you for sharing those insights with us. And we just wanted to say to all of our listeners that we hope you enjoyed this, but we also hope that maybe you'll take some things away and think about some of these issues, because they are really difficult and they are really challenging. But thank you for listening and being with us. And everybody, just remember that God loves you, and have a great day.
I hope you've enjoyed this, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. God bless.
Thank you, and God bless you.